Hey friends, it's Kara Kay, and this is the Asking for a Friend podcast, a show for the woman who has questions about herself, the church, and the world. We are all asking tough questions that affect us as women in the culture that surrounds us, and we are looking for a safe space to ask them. But don't worry, I know you're only asking for a friend. Hey friends, welcome to episode 51 of Asking for a Friend. You guys, we are coming up on a year of the podcast. I'm so excited. What a fun journey it's been walking through these challenging questions with you guys. Now, before we get into today's episode, I wanted to share something with you guys in case you are interested. So as you know, a lot of the world has kind of shut down and it's caused us to not be able to go and do events and things that we love to do, which means most everything is online. So I am excited to be speaking at a parenting event this fall called Perfectly Imperfect. So if you are a parent and you are interested in this event, there's a link in the show notes today to grab tickets to that. There are like 50 amazing speakers. It is going to be such an incredible event just to encourage and inspire you and give you practical advice as parents. So be sure and check that out. You can go to perfectlyimperfect.org to learn more, or like I said, the link in the show notes. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Donna Barber. Welcome to the show, Donna. I'm so excited to have you here today.
I'm glad to be here.
I recently got your book, Bread for the Resistance, and I have been reading through, it's a 40-day devotional, and I've been reading through it. So before we even get started, I just need to tell everybody about this book and that they have got to get this and read it. It has been such an encouragement, and I'm so grateful for your words and for the work that you're doing. Would you tell us just a little bit about the Voices Project and all the work that you're doing there?
Sure. The Voices Project is an initiative that was started about 11 years ago from Atlanta, but we have always served leaders from all over the country. And we are an initiative that works for the training and promotion of leaders of color. We organize gatherings and events that bring leaders together in order to exchange ideas, to build community, to build support and encouragement. At the beginning, especially, a lot of the leaders that we were connecting with were leaders of color who were working in organizations or churches that were largely a majority culture. Mm-hmm. And so they were one of a few, if not in some cases, the only person of color.
Right.
Initially for the Voices Project that was African-American. They were the only person in their space and had struggles as a result of that. And so we came together in order to support each other in that difficult space, right? And to encourage, but also then to think about how do we bring kingdom influence into our communities in a broader way. We saw especially in some of the urban contexts, that the church was no longer having the influence or occupying the space that it once did.
Uh-huh.
And wanted to look through what are the other spheres of society of influence where this kingdom message can be shared, because we think that God is bigger than a pulpit.
Right.
And so we looked for how do we share the values of the kingdom and the principles through the voice and the perspective of people of color in business, in politics, in the media, in arts, in entertainment, in education, as well as faith. And that has been the primary work of the Voices Project since the beginning.
That's amazing. Tell everybody where they can find that.
We are on the web at voices-project.org. And we are also, of course, on Facebook. If you look up on Facebook, the Voices Project, join the Voices on Instagram. You will find information in all of those places.
Great. I'll put those links in the show notes as well. Okay, well, let's dig into this question. Today, we're going to be tackling the question, is justice biblical? But before we go into that deeper, I want to hear from you. What is your gut reaction to that question?
I was thinking about this, and my initial reaction was that it was an odd question.
Yeah.
That it suggests that we have a distorted, if not deceived, understanding of the word justice.
Yes.
For me, it would be like asking, is love biblical? Mm-hmm. Is truth biblical? Justice, like love and truth, is the essence of who God is.
Yes.
And is permeated throughout the scriptures. So if we're raising that question, especially as a church, mm-hmm. it means that we have allowed a different definition of justice to permeate our thinking and our understanding
mm-hmm.
that is not a biblical definition.
Right.
And that's where everything else gets off track.
Yeah. Yeah. I see people getting really frustrated with the word justice. And then and then questions like this come up. Well, is justice even biblical? And I feel the same way. Like, how did the two not go together?
Right.
But then I see people get really frustrated on social media. They get angry that, you know, all these things are happening. They get mad that people are speaking up about things. And I've seen Christians claim that this conversation of justice is not for them. So what does that look like for those of us who are following Christ? What does it look like for us to walk in justice in the way that God planned and ordained for us in a sinful world?
I think to pursue justice is to pursue righteousness, right? Because that is the definition of justice. Even if you look at in just a regular dictionary,
right? Yeah.
You'll see that justice is the quality of being just, and it's righteousness or it's moral rightness. And we know that that originates in the heart of God and in the word of God. So to pursue justice is to pursue righteousness. And we as believers have been made righteous, but we live in a fallen world. And justice is to pursue God's standard for the world. It is the plumb line, if you will, of what is right for the world. And his standard or measure of what is just and righteous is found in his word and in him and is therefore biblical. Like, so to try to separate justice from Jesus is to make Jesus less than he is, right? It's to create another Christ, which is idolatry. And so I encourage people to pursue a biblical understanding of what justice is, not a legalistic social definition.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I saw a definition that said biblical justice involves making individuals and communities whole by upholding both goodness and impartiality. And yes, I agree, that's true. But we also have to look at these things through the lens of scripture, like in James, where he says,
pure religion and undefiled.
Yes, yes. And to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and that we are to be caring for these things that are unjust in our world. But I think so many of us fall short on that. So many Christians fall short and think, well, other people are doing the work, so it's fine. It's going to get done. What would you say and encourage people who are really not finding themselves immersed in this? And I think a lot of times we see people who are willing to give money to a cause because it's easy. You know, they're willing to donate, but they want to stay out of it. They don't want to be a part of acting toward justice. How would you encourage them?
I think, again, the understanding that the work of the church is righteousness. And I think most people would agree with that if you were just to make that statement, right?
Right, right.
But are not understanding that that work of righteousness is the work of justice, right? And then it raises the question, why did we ever abdicate this responsibility to give? God has given something to us. It's like me giving to one child, okay, go and do this.
Right.
And they tell their friend to go and do it. right? Mm-hmm. And then it's not done well. And they try to blame their friend. Well, as the parent, I'm coming back to the child. I told you to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm holding you responsible for this. And I believe that that is how God's posture is. He has given this work to the church.
Right.
And we have abdicated our responsibilities and given it over to the government, to the world. And then we can sit back and blame the world and say, well, see, they're just not doing a good job. Mm-hmm. Whereas God is holding us responsible for that. The same Jesus that said, go and make disciples, also said, go and feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for strangers, mm-hmm. visit the prisoners, care for the hungry, care for the sick and the imprisoned. This care for the hungry and the sick and the imprisoned leads me, the church, the people, to address a living wage, the lack of health care, mm-hmm. and mass incarceration. Yeah. These things go together. That one is the root cause of the other, or definitely, at the very least, a significant contributing factor to the other.
Right.
How do we argue that Jesus has not said to us,
right,
the church, to believers, I am expecting you to take care of the hungry, the sick, the naked, the imprisoned, the stranger, right? Mm-hmm. And somehow separating that from the systems that make them so.
That's right. And I think a lot of times within church spaces, they have a hard time finding their place because so many people feel like, oh, it's becoming about politics. It's becoming about this or that. And they don't know, people don't know where to draw the line, and they not realizing how much policies really do affect the vulnerable people and how important that is to step into. But also on the other hand, I've had conversations. I had a conversation just a couple weeks ago on the show, someone talking about, dealing with white supremacy in churches and how do we root that out? How do we deal with that? And he was saying, if a pastor walked up and said, we're struggling with white supremacy, he'd get fired on the spot many times.
Wow.
And that's the problem, is that so many churches aren't willing to acknowledge some of the issues that they're having. They're not willing to say, well, we are contributing to this. How would you encourage leaders within the church to better find their place in the conversation and in the work?
I think it's important to recognize that the church is larger than the white evangelical
Absolutely.
Expression of it.
Yeah.
But so often in America, when we say the word church, that is all we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a small part of the church universal, especially right. It is the minority in the church in the world.
Yeah.
But we have exaggerated it to, it's like when you look at a map of the world and they make the United States really big,
uh-huh.
and you know that it's distorted,
right?
That if it were more accurate representation, it's the smaller piece in the world. All these mm-hmm. other continents and countries are much larger. So I think one, the way that we talk about the church, we've made it central and too big. And so it thinks of itself in that way. God has placed us in a body, and in that body is diversity. I think that the lack of relationships with the church, with the Black church, with the Latino church, with the Korean, Chinese, Japanese church, with the Haitian church, with that these lack of relationships lead to a lot of the distorted understandings that we have, which is actually the height of supremacy.
Right.
So it's like, it's because if you think that you are supreme and you do not need to have relationships with mm-hmm. all of these other churches, all these other extensions of the body of Christ, then you are exemplifying supremacy right. in and of itself. I believe so much that it is important for us to build relationships across these different socioeconomical lines
mm-hmm.
because it gives us a more right view of ourselves and others. And then we can more accurately assess, yes, I do see where there is white supremacy. Yes, I do see the need because my brother is experiencing this. My sister has felt that. My brother has been wounded and is being injured every day by this. But because those walls are up and they're so closed off, there's no acknowledgement of that. And there's terror within the white evangelical church.
Right.
There's so much fear that has been fed and nurtured deliberately by a nation in search of power and supremacy to keep people in those boxes.
There's something about it becoming personal that changes the narrative.
Yes.
And so I love that you said that about actually forming those relationships, because when it becomes personal, you can't go back.
Exactly.
Because when something's affecting your family, your people, the people you're doing life with, then of course this is going to be a natural thing for you. But when you are stuck in that bubble, it's hard to see out. Let's talk about the people that are doing the work, mm-hmm. that are out there, that are fighting for justice, that are speaking up, and maybe they just feel tired. How can you encourage them in the seasons they find themselves in?
Well, it's one of the reasons that I wrote my devotional Bread for the Resistance, because in our talk and travel with leaders across the country, like, I was seeing and speaking with people who were in some cases expressing that burnout, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very important to acknowledge that this work that we're doing, the work of justice, and especially when you broaden it beyond just with individual people to addressing systemic justice, you are coming up against systemic evil that has been in place for centuries, that God speaks of when he says that you're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities, against the rulers of the darkness, against spiritual wickedness in high places. To do the work of justice in a systemic sense, especially, you are wrestling with those powers. And you cannot do that. I cannot do that in my own strength. It is not going to happen. You are going to be burned out. You are going to be worn down. You are going to be rendered helpless and hopeless and ready to give up, right? That we have to do this work completely in the power, through the power of the Holy Spirit. And the acknowledgement that I am nothing, I have nothing, I can do nothing without the Spirit. It is the Spirit of God that rejuvenates us, that refreshes us, that helps to strengthen us for the battle that we are in. Trying to do that based on your sheer intellect and talent is not going to be sustainable. So because I'm really smart and I've got this great expensive education and people have told me that I'm really bright or talented, I have these connections to these people, or I have this money or these friends. It is not enough when you are fighting evil.
Yeah.
Starting with that acknowledgement and knowing that is what keeps you coming back to, I've got to spend time in prayer. I've got to spend time in silence, in solitude, and stillness. I have to make time in my day, in my week, for getting before the throne of God and saying, Lord, I don't know what to do about these things. And Lord, I feel really small up against this huge machine, but I know that you are the Lord of heaven and earth, and there is nothing too hard for you. So God, I acknowledge that before you, and I ask you, Lord, to help me to see what you see, to hear what you hear. Lord, open my eyes and my ears and my understanding and fill me afresh with your Spirit. Lord, I don't know what to say unless you put the words in my mouth. I don't know who to talk to unless you lead me. Like, that daily real dependence on God is what keeps us from burnout.
Yeah.
Is what keeps generating within us the desire to keep going. But if we forget that, and it's easy to do,
yes,
you get
yes.
caught up in doing good stuff. You're doing yeah. good work. But all the enemy needs is for you to do that good work in your own strength.
Yes.
And you will be defeated.
Because when we become the center of our story and everything is within our control, we burn out so quickly.
Absolutely.
So quickly.
Absolutely. Whatever you feed grows. I always tell my kids, whatever you feed grows, whatever mm-hmm. you starve dies. If you are feeding your ego and your flesh, and that happens even when we're doing good work, because people say, oh, you're so great. Oh, this is so good. This is wonderful. Wow. We can begin to think that our success is about us. And that is leading us down a road towards destruction. And it's the remembrance that we are totally, wholly dependent upon God and His Word and His Spirit to do this thing that we could not otherwise do.
What would you say, maybe to somebody that's listening who has, while yes, we should all be invested in this work, I feel like there are some people who are more heavily invested in the physical work of justice. Mm-hmm. What would you say to encourage those that are? How can people stand in the gap for them? You know, practically, what are some ways to help them and bring them just a sense of peace and comfort as they're doing this work and fighting the fight?
I think that begins with supporting people who are in the work, begins with that acknowledgement that is your work too.
Yes.
That is important to own it for yourself, that this is my work and I'm looking for a way to express that. And I'm looking to do that through the support of people who are on frontline, mm-hmm. right? A simple question, asking people, how can I help? How can I help you? Is there something that I can do to make this easier for you? Right? How can I support you? Asking that question of people who are heavily involved in this is that in and of itself is an encouragement.
Yeah.
That somebody says, I see you. I believe in you. I'm with you. How can I help you? And coming with the servant, that servant attitude, that's not like, let me tell you what you should do.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, I would do this, but
right.
How can I help you? And what is it that you need me to do? And being ready to do that.
Yes.
And I often think about if every believer, whatever your occupation and expertise, your work is in the world, if you offered a tithe of your time, your talent, and your resource, the world would be a different place. No matter what that was, if you were a barber and you said, you know what, I'm going to give 10% of my hours and I'm going to cut hair for free.
Yeah.
And that 10% of that time, 4 hours a week, that I'm going to dedicate that to cutting the hair of the homeless.
Right.
Right. Or children who are their parents are incarcerated, or like that I'm going to look to take 4 hours of my time and give that, or I'm going to give 4 hours of my time to someone else who is doing that.
Yes.
I'm going to donate of my time and my talent. I'm going to offer my services. I'm a bookkeeper, and I know that this nonprofit is doing this work. But they are doing it on a shoestring budget, right? Or this person is doing this work on a shoestring budget. I'm going to offer the services. Let me do your bookkeeping for you for free. Or let me do it at this greatly reduced fee. Maybe I can't go and do this thing you're doing, but let me serve you in this way, right? So taking whatever, what is the time, what is the talent, the expertise that you have, and saying, how can this be applied in this effort?
Yes.
And then of course there is just offering financial resource, saying, what is it that you need, either to give the money or to give in kind, like, you know, oh, we need this office equipment. Organizations now, especially in this time that we're living in, are paying so much money for websites and domains, the things that people don't even think about.
You just assume those appear out of thin air.
Exactly, right? that are as though they, you know, they're invisible, mm-hmm. and yet you're paying every month the people who are managing the platforms for giving. Yes. So you go to a page and you click a button to make your donation, and you don't ever have to think about, well, how does that all work? But that organization is paying for. So when you click that button, somebody has to manage how your funds get from your bank into their bank, right?
Right. Yeah.
And there's costs involved in all of that. When they send out electronic emails, somebody's paying MailChimp so much a month to make those things happen.
And that gets very expensive.
Absolutely. Those are all places where people can plug and say, hey, let me pay for your web domain for this year.
Let
me cover the cost of this, the Stripe fees or your
fees.
Square. Yes. Like, let me pay for the bookkeeping. There are all these things that are happening all the time. People don't think about it because they don't have to. But there's many ways where you can get involved in this work if you are not able to do it hands-on yourself.
Right. I think that's such a good point, because far too often we think that doing work like this means that you have to be down ladling soup at the soup kitchen, and that it has to, you know, you have to be doing those types of things. But ask yourself, how has God gifted you? I would never be someone that would do somebody's finances, because I'm terrible with the numbers, but there's people that are great with that.
Absolutely.
And so go to an organization and say, hey, here's my skills. Is there any way I can plug in and help you in this specific area? Because there's so many organizations that are lacking that, that can't pay us, you know, a full staff, but do need help in those areas. And I think that's such a good thing to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So a huge part of justice is caring for the vulnerable. Mm-hmm. As Christians, how can we better enter that gap to where we're not just saying, I'm sending a check, but not even really having to think about it? How can people step into those spaces to care for people in the way that God does?
I think that begins with looking around you. Look around you, your church, your neighborhood, your city. Look for the people that God calls out expressly in scripture. Look for the widows and the orphans, and understand that some people have been made to be widows and orphans, not through physical death, but because their unjust system has locked up their husbands and their fathers for indefinite periods of time and made them to be widowed and orphans.
Right.
That poverty has locked them into a place where they are forever on the margins and struggling. And if anything, any good has come of COVID, I would say that it has made that truth more apparent to the masses, to see the people who have always been struggling, but now they're brought to the surface and seen, looking for who are the people who are suffering most, especially during this time, during this pandemic. Who are those people? And how do I, is there anything I can do to ease that suffering?
Right.
In my own community, in my own church. We have two children that we adopted. And when we were going through that process, we were talking with one of the facilitators of the class. She, you know, in the work of social work and working for the Department of Children's Services. And we had a brief conversation about the church. And she said, you know, if the church would just do what it says it is there to do for the people who are sitting even in the pews.
Yes.
She said, I would be out of a job.
Right.
She said, parents don't set out to hurt their children.
Right.
Right. They're struggling, and some of them are on the edge every day. They're just trying to survive. And if we would just notice and look for who are the single moms or dads in our midst, and how do I make it easier for you? How do I support you? Just in the basics of life, to know that when it's cold and flu season in a regular year, the cost of the over-the-counter medicine, maybe you have the health care to cover the stuff that the doctor prescribes.
Yeah.
But the over-the-counter stuff is not covered. Like, I'm just thinking of like those practical daily things. There are people around us that are struggling, that are trying to figure out, maybe they have a car, but they're trying to figure out how to get gas.
Right.
Right. To get to work.
Yeah.
And there are always opportunities to address those things if we're looking for them. They are the vulnerable.
Yes.
They are the people that are living on the edge of survival every day. And often we are just missing them.
Yeah.
And they are working and working hard and still barely making it. And we can do something about that. How do we help with childcare? How do we help with transportation? How can we step in into those places? And in some cases, how do we make room in our own homes, in our own lives for the vulnerable?
Yes.
I preached recently a sermon about Elisha and the Shunammite woman, how this woman was a woman of means in her community. And she noticed Elisha coming and going through her community. And she spoke to her husband, let's invite him to dinner. And then let's add a room onto our house so that when he passes through, he can stay here. Right? There were very practical ways.
Mm-hmm.
She saw a person who was doing the work, and she couldn't go out and get involved in his work as the prophet of God, but she could make it easier for him to do what he was doing. And that we can all do in some way if we're looking. So I said, look around, and pray and ask God to put on your heart, who help give me eyes to see, Lord.
Right, right.
Right.
Because he will reveal it to you.
Yes.
And get ready for your life to be changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's no going back. Once you're willing to really be open and ask God to show you, then you'll be forever changed.
Yes.
All right. Here on my show, we are women who ask questions, who do the work to really reframe our thinking about the world around you. Is there anything you have been reading, watching, maybe listening to that's helped you rethink the way you look at the world?
I think the book that I've been reading most recently is Bryan Stevens' book, Just Mercy.
Oh, yes.
I saw the film at the end of last year, got the privilege of being invited to a pre-showing, then having to sit with that like while we're waiting for the actual film to come out, because I didn't want to ruin it for other people who hadn't seen it yet. So sat with the heaviness of it in that space, and then I decided to read the book this year. And that has influenced my thinking as well. Even just the title.
Yes.
Just Mercy. You know, not just saying like, well, only mercy,
mm-hmm.
but saying a mercy that is reflective of justice, right? That mercy is justice as well. His whole example of his life and the work, I think, is one that we should reflect on and maybe be considering and following.
Right.
I looked at how he entered the work as a novice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a know-it-all.
Right.
He's like, I'm just going to help out in this way. He was an empathetic listener.
Yes.
He was listening to the people that he was there to serve, not just to check off a list of work, but really listening and feeling with them their pain. He was willing to enter that pain and to be moved by it in the way that the scripture says that Jesus looked on the multitude and had compassion.
Right.
He was moved in his gut, but in his view of us. And in the same way, Brian was moved when he looked at these men who were on death's row. He went back and finished his training, right? And became and pursued doing a work and doing it well. As a result, he served under experienced leaders first during his training and learned from them. He was willing to relocate to a point of need right? Mm-hmm. To go and to move into a community and to be in a place that was hard. And yet he did that willingly, right? Even if he wasn't asked to, he chose to.
Right.
He was willing to travel, to go the distance back and forth hours a day because it was necessary. He was detailed and thorough in his work, and he was persistent. He acknowledged and he respected and listened to, and this is so important, he listened to the community,
yes,
of the people he was serving. Not just seeing them as these isolated figures, but knowing that they came from a people, a family, a history that was all important and part of who he was and crucial to their exoneration.
Right.
He sought partners and people to help, which means that he had to acknowledge his own lack of knowledge and ability, mm-hmm, in certain areas. So I just think there's so much there in not just what he was doing, but how he was doing it that speaks to us, in and those of us especially who are committed to the work of justice, but to all of us as the church, as to how we approach the world.
Yeah, I think Just Mercy is probably one of the best books ever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad they did the film, because just seeing that brought to life is, it's, yes, incredible. I just sat and sobbed through it multiple, mm-hmm, times. Mm-hmm. It's so good. All right, last question as we wrap up. Tell me something that has brought you joy this week.
This past weekend was my birthday.
Yes.
So I got to spend time with friends and family and in celebration, and to just sit and talk and laugh and eat really good food.
Yes.
all of that was very nourishing and encouraging. And, you know, when you come up to these annual markers, it's always a point of reflection too, mm-hmm, and an opportunity to express gratitude to God just for being able to live another year. And it's one of the times that I'm really actually grateful for Facebook, because they bring up these memories,
yes,
in your feed. And that was also a blessing too, that I saw like things from 7 years ago when we first relocated to Portland with my kids. And those things brought me joy.
Love it. Well, happy late birthday. I'm so glad we could have you on the show today.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your encouragement and your wisdom today. I appreciate you speaking into me and my audience.
Yes, it's my pleasure. And I do want to just say, with that question about joy, seeking joy and making room in our lives for that is important.
Yes.
Because the joy of the Lord is our strength. It is a counter, it is a balance to the hardness that we are dealing with.
Yeah.
And strengthens us to be able to continue to do what we do. So I do encourage the listeners to make room in your day and in your week, seasonally, annually, for spaces just for joy.
Yes.
You know, whether that's a time with your spouse, a time with family, time with friends, a getaway for a weekend or a week, even though right now we're limited in how we can travel, but a road trip, a day at the beach. Those things are important for us to be able to continue long-term that which God has given us to do.
Yes, that is so true, and I could not agree more. Thank you so much, Donna, for joining me today. I appreciate your wisdom and just the time that you take to pour into the lives of others. So I just thank you for your stories and your wisdom here today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Guys, you're going to want to be back next week, because Elizabeth is coming back and we are doing round two of What Did I Miss? So over the last couple months, we've read a lot of books and watched a lot of TV, and we have things to share with you that we think you need to be watching, listening to, and reading. So you will enjoy that next week. Before we go, just a quick reminder that you can always follow me on the socials. I am at karak.james on Facebook and Instagram. And finally, keep asking questions for a friend.